I don't know that leaders realize that a little bit of time in getting to know people, not just at work or not just about them professionally, the whole person, it goes such a long way. And it also sends a message, it's okay to reveal yourself, to be your full, true, authentic self. And today's culture is desperate for that, for sure.
Is it fact or fallacy that female leaders have unique struggles compared to their male counterparts? Today, you'll learn from a female leader about her own unique struggles leading in the corporate world. Every leader, male or female, can take learnings from these experiences. Dana Mahina is the woman behind the Work-Life Harmonize show and podcast. Over the decades, she's worked in the corporate world as a renowned coach, speaker, and expert on leadership. Enjoy my candid conversation with Dana. These are my three key takeaways from my conversation with Dana. So what's got you into this frame of really helping women, empowering women?
Well, had I had me in my 20s, things would have gone quite differently. It's that old question that we always ask, like, if you knew then what you know now. And I also feel like my level of coaching, which is great, it's not affordable or accessible for most women. It's C-suite only, and that's starting to piss me off. And so I knew at some point I'd want to be willing to be able to do something that's more portable for women, more accessible, more affordable. And now it's like all happening at the same time, which is great. It's great.
You seem like a person that don't do things in house.
Oh, you're right. You're a good read. That's so true. All or nothing. Poker.
How has this all or nothing got you to where you are today? Tell us a bit about that.
Sometimes I don't look before I leap. There's this great assessment I use called StrengthFinders. It's international, and it's about the scallop tool of people's strengths and their blind spots and what they're good at, what they suck at. And it's not about personality or behavior. It's about talent. And one of my talents is known as the activator, which is ready, fire, aim. So I just kind of go for it. I go all in. If I'm passionate, I believe in the cause. I've been this way since I was a kid. Not that it's always the wisest choice. It's just the way I'm wired.
That's classic. On episode 108, which we recorded not that long ago, I had the person, my guest did a live reading for me just for a small section of the podcast, which had never happened before. She'd never done one on a live podcast. And to use the terms from StrengthFinder, my soul is telling me I need to be more of an activator, less deliberate about stuff and just go with the flow.
So, cool.
So I think I want more of what you've got.
That's so cool.
How do you help me, Dana? How do you help me get more of
what
you've got?
Well, it's also to embrace what you've got and then to work with someone who's got what you want. Because if you complement each other, so activator, for example, is like green light, go, need for speed, leap, don't look, entrepreneurial, take that risk, drive everybody. You have to also have somebody analytical around you to say, okay, what's the best case and worst case scenario? And you also have to have somebody very strategic around you who's going to say, okay, this is my funny story. If I'm going to take everybody off the damn cliff, because that's the escape route, I better work with somebody who says, you know, left, you break a leg, right, everyone perishes, and down the middle is 30 extra minutes, but you all make it, no wounds. And then I am the activator, and I'll say, everyone, we're going down the middle. So it's really, it's coupling up.
Absolutely. Well, it already sounds like we've got a good couple on this podcast. You sort of wear each other's yin and yang by the sounds of it. This should make for a really good conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it feels that way to me. I love StrengthFinders. I'm like a little bit of an addict, so.
Absolutely. Let's dive into this topic around sort of struggles of female leaders in the corporate world. I sense strongly that, you know, this is a
again, even from the book that you share, this is a real passion of yours, and most of us develop these passions through our past experiences. So how about we just open up this big can of worms, and what are some of these significant struggles that you've had in this time of the corporate world, and what's taking you where you're at? And then we'll start unpacking some of those, like maybe a little bit more detail about how we can use them to help others.
That's a great question and very loaded. So struggle number one is we just simply do not have equality. We do not have equal pay. We do not have equal access. It's worse for women of color. I am a white woman of privilege. I acknowledge that, and I do my best to be an active ally. So for women in general, it is an unequal footing that we're starting from in the States back as long as time. And so to gain equality, to gain equal footing, you know, not for lack of trying, whether it's suffragette movement or whatever it is, like we're always fighting, right, for our rights. The challenge is we've come from so far behind, it's almost as if you don't really catch up. So I've sort of, this sounds terrible, I've given up on that as a way to help other women. And instead, what I've done is I've made my own way. I've crossed my own threshold. I've charted my own path. And when I make it somewhere, for example, when I became a CEO, I'm a recovering one now, my goal was to bring more women up with me. You know, you reach that top of the elevator, whatever that looks like, you send it back down for the next woman, the next woman, and the next woman. And that doesn't mean only women either, because again, it's all about having the right mix of people helping each other, harnessing their powers, and lifting each other up.
Do you think women help each other in regard? And what, well, let me just put some context around that. It feels to me, and I've seen this in action, where women are often the harshest critics of other women.
True. So it's not to be squishy. Women are either incredibly helpful, lift up other women, we rise up, they go low, we go high, all that kind of Michelle Obama stuff. Or what I have found in my own career, and this is part of what drives me now to help young up-and-coming women, I definitely experienced women versus women. And to me, there's nothing worse. It's debilitating. It's hurtful. I tell a story about being in the loo, and a bunch of women that I work with on an executive team, all women, talking about me in a really toxic way. So what do I do? I'm like 33 at the time. I'm 55 now. I thought, F it. I slammed open the door. I said, it's me. And of course, you know, it's so uncomfortable for everyone. And that's all I did, though. I didn't confront or take it on or tear them down or try to go for like their throat, because that was just going to make it worse. I had a little bit of maturity to say, you know what, I'm going to walk away. But they know, they're on notice, like check on the chessboard. I don't need to checkmate them. So women listening to your show, it's so important that they realize if you're not an ally, you might actually be foe. And you've got to choose. You've got to choose if you're going to stand with or stand against.
Have you put any thought into, or even any research into, say, women's psyche around that? Like, why does it seem to be more prevalent with women versus men? I've seen other men tear other men down, but it just doesn't seem to be anywhere near as prolific.
Yeah, you know, quantifiable research to myself, no, there's a ton of it out there. And I would encourage your guests and future guests and your current listeners to really research the topic for themselves. I like to go into storytelling, anecdotes, and qualitativeness around my experience, which is women, a lot of times, especially because I came out of Silicon Valley, there is no more cutthroat place on earth than Silicon Valley for women. And the way it was for them was they were trying to compete in a man's world, or at least that's what they told themselves. Some of it was true and some of it was not. And so it's like outwit, outlast, outsmart, like you're on this episode of Survivor in real life. And I do find that hyper-driven, overworked, high-achieving women tend to go for the jugular sometimes. I worked with many founders who were women, incredibly successful, wonderful human beings, but they were vicious. I mean, I worked with one that, you know, we called her a pit bull because she would go for you across the boardroom table, if she thought you weren't with her or next to her or supporting her. So I feel like it's part of this, you know, I have to compete and I'm in a man's world. So let me act like what I believe a man would do, which isn't necessarily true. Not all men are bad and not all women are good. People are people. I also would say that for women in general, they tend to have just this natural comparative analysis that we do of each other. She's fatter. She's thinner. She's cuter. She has better taste in clothes. I have no idea. I'm sure one of your guests in the past or in the future could tell us why women do that. It is a psyche thing, and I'm not a psychologist, but it is a thing with women. We compare and contrast all the time.
I can't resist. Is there any more to that Lou story? I mean, you busted open the door and, hey, it's me. What was even some of the reactions of the participants?
There's a lot more to the story. So let's see. We were on a...
Do share.
I have to go back into the annals of my brain. So, yeah, this is a long time ago. I believe there were six of us on that executive team and no men, which I had never experienced before. And frankly, I called it the cat house. It was way worse for me than it had been being the only woman with a bunch of men in my other corporate roles. So I was already like a little bit of a duck out of water.
And just to be clear, you were the CEO and the operator.
This is worse. I was the head of employee development training and like the number one person on the team to work with every new hire and every aspirational leader and anyone who was promoted into leadership. So I was supposed to be the one caring about everybody, mentoring everybody. So I had a weird title. It was like SVP Employee Development. And here I was with my peers and our president, a female. We were the worst offenders. So it's really hard if, you know, if you walk the walk, great. But if you only talk the talk, it's empty. You know, people follow what leaders do, not what they say. So I'm pretty sure all of them except two, because there were three of them in the loo. All three of them, not the other two that on the executive team that were in the loo at the time, they came one by one into my office to apologize. First, it was chief legal counsel, and then CIO or CTO, whatever her title was. And then, this is the best. That's right. Okay, I'm remembering. It was the CHRO. So chief legal counsel, chief head of technology, and head of HR, which is hilarious that there was a head of HR gossiping about me, and I was new. I was new. So I only lasted 13 months at that company. I did give them the boot at about month 12, and they were really upset. They were very confused. They couldn't understand why I was leaving. And it's not because of the loo. It's because they really didn't want to transform. They really didn't want to develop as leaders and lead by example. And most of the women in that organization, it was probably like a 60-40 split, women versus quote unquote men in terms of total employees. We had about 100 employees. It just wasn't a healthy culture. And of course, whether you're a man or a woman, toxic culture, it starts from the top. So I had to get out of there.
Well, it sounds like you did a wise thing. You also mentioned a little bit earlier about sort of men, you know, in a man's world. And I guess what made me think is what could men do? What should men do in order to maybe help women who are aspiring to these senior leadership roles and in senior leadership roles to try and get to some level of equality, using your word earlier?
Many of us in life don't get a mentor. In my experience, I've had one, and it's a man. His name's Ron. I talk about him a lot in my first book. He really changed my life. And interestingly, I went into nonprofit after that corporate debacle and that female cat house experience. And I spent a couple of years in nonprofit. I really couldn't afford to much longer, or I probably would have stayed. And then I went to work for Ron, and Ron really changed my life. As a young mom now with two kids, I was in a pretty unhappy marriage. I probably didn't know it or pretended at the time that it was okay, but he knew. He got to know me. He appreciated everything I brought to the table. He challenged me in a healthy way We did debate. He's a really brilliant man and still a dear friend today. And I'm pretty smart myself, and I really like healthy debate. We didn't use terms back then like discourse or whatever the current terminology is. We just called it healthy debate, and we would toss things around all the time, whether it was on a whiteboard or sitting around a table or out for coffee. We would just do these jam sessions about, you know, what if we developed this tool or product, or what if we changed the way this particular report works, or whatever it was. And so he really taught me a lot about really bringing my best self and my best thinking to the table. The next thing he did was really get to know me. So he knew I had young kids. He probably knew, because he was very wise, that it was a not so great marriage. He knew that I was a workaholic. He knew that he was going to leave before me every single day, and I'd be one of the last people out. He knew that I was going to drive the team extremely hard, maybe too hard. So, like, he knew me, how I was wired, what I wanted, what I didn't, what was working, what was not. And then the third thing he did that you can do as male allies is really, again, it's so funny, it's back to leading by example. He would actually say to me sometimes, hey, when is your daughter's ballet performance? Or when is your daughter's theater performance? And I would say, oh, it's this time, let's say 4 p.m. on a Thursday. And he would come to my office at 3:30 and look at his watch and say, 30 minutes? And I would just say, oh, no, I think I could do 40. I'll make it. Commute's not so bad. I've checked the traffic. And he'd say, 30 minutes? So he really changed my behavioral pattern. And it not only helped my young daughters and really myself, the women on my team in particular used to see me and follow me one extreme way and start to actually have more integration of what I call work-life harmony. I didn't know that's what it would be called back then. And that notion of balance is bullshit started to percolate for me even back then. And he really taught it to me. It wasn't a woman. It was him.
It's a great example. I guess the message I get from that is just, hey, as leaders, we need to treat people just as people. It actually doesn't matter if you're male, female, black, white, whatever the hell you are, you're just people, right? Getting to know people, getting to understand people, getting to what drives them, understanding their life as people makes a significant difference, doesn't it?
Makes a huge difference. And sometimes I feel like it's a lost art. I don't know that leaders realize that a little bit of time in getting to know people, not just at work or not just about them professionally, the whole person, it goes such a long way. And it also sends a message, it's okay to reveal yourself, to be your full, true, authentic self. And today's culture is desperate for that, for sure.
What's another struggle that you've experienced around being a female leader in the corporate world?
So again, I love storytelling. I had some really early success. I grew up in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it was a Fortune company that moved me to California. And I had early success. This is before marriage, before kids, very late 20s. And yet I realized the more I got closer to the top, despite the glass ceiling that existed, so there'd be a limit, the closer I got to the top, the worse it actually got for me. And I mean that legitimately. So the COO of the company would say things to me like, and if you have listeners that can relate to this, it ends up okay, so don't worry too much. He would say things to me like, you're so brilliant. And he'd put his one hand on one side of his body, on this side. And then he'd say, and yet on this other side, you refuse to conform. And I'm wondering to myself why that's not a good thing, but I'm watching him get heated. And he was very powerful, very wealthy, very well known. He had come up through the ranks of the company, very similar to myself, ironically, from a Midwest place, like myself, just not Wisconsin, another place in the Midwest in the United States. And he rose really quickly to the top of the ranks. So here we are both in, you know, venture capitalist, Menlo Park, Sand Hill Road, top spot in the world, for companies and affluence, yet we're having this divide and he's frustrated with me. And I was young. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. I just know I felt really shitty and like I had done something wrong. And then I started to feel like I'm disappointing people, which I hate. I still hate it to this day and struggle with it. And I couldn't please him. Despite my success, despite my contributions, it was not for a lack of trying. I talked to a therapist. I just was like, what is this basket of other stuff that won't conform that I wear or I exemplify? And why is he so mad at me? Because he seemed mad. And so when I left that company, notice the pattern. That was a long ride, though. I was 4 years in the field for them and 2 years at corporate. I was recruited out by a headhunter to a global company that wasn't even based in the United States. Hallelujah. Female president, unheard of in North America. I mean, it just opened my eyes that this other basket of weird nonconformity stuff that I carry is actually part of my asset, not part of my detriment. It just wasn't going to fit in that very like Star Trek Borg type model. And so I had to get out. So what I always tell women is, if you can't make it where you are and you can't post out to another position and the culture's toxic or they don't love you and embrace you and cherish you and value you because they just don't, you have to move out to move up. You just do. And not everyone has the bravery or maybe the perceived options to do so. I would challenge you. There are options if you look for them. And if you ask, you have to ask for help.
How long did it take you to feel like you had that strength to do that yourself, let alone now giving advice for others?
A long time. A really long time. I went out on my own 8 years ago and I'm 55. So I would say not even 8 years ago. I'd say in the last 5 years. Something happened when I turned 50. I just don't give a shit what people think anymore. I don't. I do me. You like me, great. You don't. That's okay. And I have a very different way of navigating life that is informed by a ton of mistakes, hitting my head really hard so many times, being kind of a slow learner, and also by watching what others, men and women, that I admire and respect and want to learn from do. And again, that's great leadership. And I can think of probably 5 or 10 people off the top of my head, both men and women, who were living the way I always wanted to. But I definitely wasn't really fully embracing it till I turned 50 5 years ago.
Something about 50, hey?
I don't know. If I can bottle it, to give it to all the 40-year-olds. 50's the new 40. Let's do it at 40, ladies. Because if I knew then what I know now, I would say that the bravery had a lot to do with money, security, being the sole financial provider for my girls, even though I am now happily remarried to the second and final gent, and we've been together 9 years and married 7. I'm still, for the most part, the provider, although the girls are now 19 and 23. So the 23-year-old's kind of off the dole, not fully. I wish she was soon. And the 19-year-old's still pseudo on the dole.
Keep working on it. Do you sort of feel that you needed to, like, the journey you've been on and some of this you've just shared with us today, like, you've had to have that journey. You've had to have those challenges. You've not, I guess, had the strength earlier at 40s. And there's a reason for that. And that's sort of made you who you are today and this empowering person that actually is doubling down on helping women that come to you. Do you ever feel like that?
Every day, Brendan. And I love how you said doubling down on women. Even that's taken bravery. And part of it is I really want to do right by them. I really want to be my best, highest self before I really come to their aid. It's a tall order to be a role model. I don't even love when I'm called that. It's flattering and all. It's a big order for someone who takes things very seriously, maybe too seriously. I get really almost obsessive around how am I showing up? Yet I don't have a good alternative because you only get so much time to help and support and influence and lift up others. And life is short. Life is short. And so, yeah, I definitely take it really seriously. But I am doubling down.
Good on you, and keep doing it. Do you in a woman's psyche, do they feel like they have to be at their best, actually better than their best in these corporate environments because of some of these challenges you've already shared with
us
today?
Yes, I love the word you use. Do they feel? They do. I also teach fact versus fiction, then feelings about facts. And it's funny, I was thinking about someone I was coaching years ago, and she was young, kind of who I'm working and coaching more now. And after about a year of working together, she got all these awards, 40 under 40, all these cool accolades. She got promoted, like all that was great. But the most important lesson we ever had together wasn't about like her strategy or her numbers or how she developed people or what networking she did. It was this lesson. We had this one day where she said to me, "You told me not to feel anything." And I just died. I said, "What?" Her name's Brittany. She wouldn't mind me telling the story. I said, "What? Brittany, I'm a feelingless monster. What? I told you not to feel anything? When? How? Where? Why?" She said, "Well, you said it's facts versus feelings, so I'm just going to go with facts." I said, no. Let me retreat. It's facts. Get your facts. Get rid of fiction. And then feel all the feelings and the feels based on fact. So you don't waste your own time, effort, energy, precious mental headspace. Upset other people, focus on the wrong things, make horrible decisions. And I mean, we laugh for a long, long time. And we would then sometimes be on a panel together in front of other women talking about aspirational leadership. And I'd say, "Can I tell the story?" And we would just laugh. But you should have seen people's faces. Because there is some element today still in certain kinds of work where they don't really want you feeling. They don't really want you bringing your personal life to work. They want that divide, personal and professional. And that's total nonsense. So that's that story.
What do you advise women who you work with now who, let's say, they may not have that exact Lou moment that you had, but let's say it's their own version of Lou moment. How do you help them to navigate that? What sort of advice do you give them?
So I like to say it's not a confrontation, it's a conversation. So many of us are very confrontation reluctant, or worse. We just don't want to do it. We're very harmonious. We like everyone to come to the middle. It's like NATO. I'm not wired like that. I'm kind of cool with confrontation. If something happens, I'm on it. And I'm assertive without being aggressive. But again, that takes a lot of time, effort, energy, and nuance to really create that balance. So for those of you that are confrontation reluctant, it's really not that way. It's a conversation. So if you ignore the Lou moments, you hear someone talking badly about you, you get the feeling in the lunchroom that someone's looking at you funny and gossiping. You hear people outside your own office or in the hallway or at the water cooler. And you know, or at least you feel, that someone's saying something not so nice about you. The only way to check in whether or not that's true, whether or not that's a fact, is to talk about it. And so you don't need to go in guns a-blazing. You can literally use what I call the six Socratic questions. Who, what, where, when, why, and how. If you open any conversation with a question, you've already taken defense out of it. You will learn something, even if you don't like it. You will also open dialogue to be just that, to be open and not so prescriptive or constricted or linear. And so when I'm coaching, it's almost every day now, I will hear people interact and they're trying to ask genuine questions. They're trying to connect, to have deep conversation. They may even be attempting to confront something that's happened. And I always stop them respectfully if they don't put a who, what, where, when, why, or how in front of the opening question. And you see the whole dynamic change and shift. Everybody just takes a chill pill. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, what I was going to say is questions are disarming in my book, if you can just lead that way. And the other fantastic, I believe, fantastic leadership principle in that is just the element of curiosity. Asking a question brings that level of curiosity. And like you said, it just lowers the tenseness of the situation, doesn't it? And it's that 10, 20 seconds of courage. And when you do that 10, 20 seconds of courage, you do it once, then that gives you a little bit more courage if it happens again to do it. And people know that all of a sudden they're going to be, if somebody's hearing this, they're going to be not confronted, but they're going to be approached to have a conversation around this. So maybe they'll think twice about doing it next time.
Let's pray that's true. I also like to say hope is not a strategy. So the strategy is what you teach, which is stay.
You saying I'm living in hope.
I'm bitter and jaded.
Brendan, pull your heads out of the clouds.
So what you teach is actually really spot on, and I'm glad you brought it up because sometimes I forget to remind people, and I'll take a page out of your playbook too. Being curious is everything. And to prove that, I say to people, you do realize that if you first seek to understand someone, even if they're mean or nasty or rude or misinformed or whatever it is that they're doing, they're still human doing the best they can with what they've got. It may not be good enough, which is why you may have to leave that marriage, that work, that whatever. However, if you first seek to understand others before seeking to be understood yourself, the only thing I know that works is curiosity. Because sometimes I'm like, I don't want to deal with you. You're a jerk. Curiosity helps break me out of that judgment. And maybe they are. Maybe they're really a jerk or being a jerk or acting like a jerk or saying or doing something jerky. I don't want to excuse that either. I don't want to just pretend that didn't happen and shove it down, which is what so many women do. We just make ourselves small and we shove it all the way down. And then we wonder 20 years later why we're so mad and pissed off. Well, probably because you shove so much down, it has to come out and that's the explosion. And otherwise, it's an implosion. And both of those are terrible scenarios that happen to women every day. And again, not just women. It happens to men, too. So, I would say curiosity is an incredible leveler of the field because you can always find something to be curious about. Like, let's say I don't like you. I do, but let's just pretend I don't like you. And you're nasty and you're out to get me and you want to take my job and you're talking crap about me around the office and you've got a posse of women against me. I do like your glasses and I do like the color of your eyes. So I might just be curious about that. Like, who has that color of hazel blue green in your eyes? Is it your mom's side or your dad's side? Or, oh, those are cool glasses. Are they those ridiculous Italian-based expensive designer ones that I can't afford, or can you get those online somewhere? You know, like I'll find something to be curious about. And sometimes, I don't know if you experience this or if your listeners do, sometimes curiosity leads to like. And if you find something to like about someone that's not very likable, you're cooking with gas. It's actually quite remarkable to watch what happens when that occurs.
Yeah, spot on. And thank you for the compliments. Thankfully, I have a friend who owns a Specsavers. So Maybe I couldn't afford these glasses under normal circumstances. I just want to go back to equality as that sort of first challenge. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but the sort of words you use is, look, I've given up on equality, and I don't, you're not saying that literally, but you're focusing on what you can control is the message I got, and taking responsibility. Can you just speak to that a little bit more for women and men listening to this, to say, what does that look like from a, hey, forget about this part, because that's something, what can you do to have an impact in that?
I don't regret having said that.
You can still use the word, it's okay, we won't edit it out.
So, yeah, what I am going to talk about now is what I learned during the initiation of the Black Lives Matter movement. And I'm going to be really raw, if that's okay. So my daughters were quite young at the time. I want to say they were 15 or 14. Yeah, 14 and 18, or 14 and 17. They have a 3.5-year gap between them. And in Northern California, for those of you that know Northern California, or you live there, or you visited there, or you read about it, because it's a popular place to read about, good and bad, we like to think of ourselves as progressive. We like to think of ourselves as very diverse. If you're in the city of San Francisco, there is quite a bit of diversity. If you're in the tiny little beach town that we lived in for 22 years, there's the Latina community and the white community. So I would not call that diverse at all. I lived in the Half Moon Bay area, which is by Maverick's famous world surfing competition. So cool, laid back, pretty open, fairly liberal, however, not very diverse. So when things got really bad, my daughter said, are we going to go to a rally? And at first, I was afraid. I was definitely afraid. And I told them I was afraid. And they said, too bad, because we're going with you or without you. And of course, Mother Bear kicks in and they're not going alone. It is so good they opened my eyes that you have to do something. You have to do something. If we're ever going to have diversity, equity, and inclusion, maybe it's not the hope for equality in this lifetime or my children's lifetimes. Maybe it's paving it forward now, one step at a time, that I'm talking about, because you have to do something. That was one of the most peaceful rallies I've ever been a part of. It was also the opposite of fearful. It was joyful. It was supportive. It was women and children and men and, you know, transgender, everybody. It was everybody. And it was all ages. And I mean, there was so much power and joy and tons of tears. Like, it was, it will have forever changed my life. So after that, and this is what I am doing about equality, I decided that I would not do diversity, equity, and inclusion training ever, ever again. I had done some, or I had participated at least in some. I said, I'm not going to speak on it and get paid to speak. I'm not going to be on a panel. I'm not going to be coaching this. I'm not. Because I'm going to give that business to friends, especially women of color. And so that's been a long time now, many, many, many years. And I still do this today. If someone says, hey, do you know any great DEI coaches, diversity, equity, and inclusion? I say, oh, yeah, I have like five of them on the ready. Four are women, one is a man, and they're all excellent, and it's going to depend on what you all figure out. Let me connect you, and let me get out of it. And so I guess that's what I'm saying. You have to do something. It's not okay to do nothing, looking the other way, or pretending you don't see it, or not recognizing the fact that we all have bias, taking it from unconscious into consciousness, and then doing something to move toward something better. That is what I'm doing.
Yeah, well done on, again, taking those steps. And the, I just keep coming back in these sort of topics come up, I guess you say, reasonably regularly in conversation around a leadership podcast. It makes perfect sense. Just I have a difficult thing getting over the fact that we are just humans. We can look, and maybe that's just naive and stuff like that. I just look at people as human, and I get cranky, annoyed. It's harder for me to be curious and judgmental when I just see, like, hey, I've never been to a rally like that. And look, that's not my thing. But I sort of look at it and say, well, it feels like it's just a group of people being human, respecting other humans, and just standing arm in arm about something that you're passionate about. And that's beautiful. But when we start to define X, Y, and Z and this and ledgers start to tilt too many one way or the other, it's just like, it doesn't seem to help to me. I don't know what your experience in the States is, but that certainly is my personal experience in Australia and what I
feel. Yeah, and each cultural difference is super valid and super important. And, you know, for 100%. Those of us that have had the fortune to experience other cultures and travel in other locations, mine was mostly Western Europe and Latin America and a little bit of South America. What I will tell you I have always found is what you're saying, which is people are people. I think that's a Depeche Mode song from the 80s.
No idea. I do know Depeche Mode, but
I may have screwed up which band it is. I apologize if they listen to your show.
Doesn't matter.
Show notes. Is it Depeche Mode? It's not REM. I almost said that, and then I realized no. So people are people. I'm with you, and I want to be with you, and I'm Aquarius, so I'm very, like, I love humanity. I love the connectedness. I love the DNA thread that I believe connects all of us as humans. My challenge is that and this is probably in the States mostly, if I think about my other travels and work and experiences in other countries, in the States, I have gotten myself caught in saying things like, I don't see color. I got in big trouble with really good friends, mostly women of color, who have said, you can't say that. Why? I mean it. They're like, but you do. And you know what? They're right. Because you know why I was afraid to go to that rally? Because I knew I was going to be the minority white woman with my young kids at that rally. And I was. So that's bias. To be able to admit it and talk about it and own it, that's how we start to make things better and to have progression is really what I'm finding, at least for myself. And it can't be true for everyone. There's no such thing as extremes, like all or nothing, even though I know we talked about that in the pre-show. And maybe I live my life a little bit like that. It's not quite that edgy. I don't know if that helps.
Understand. Let's go back to the women versus men situation. What I want to know is what, from a work environment, what does, in your experience, what do you think a woman brings to an organization versus maybe what a man doesn't often bring to an organization?
And I don't want to be too, like, new glossary of terminology, but it's emotional intelligence and intuition. And again, I'm not saying men don't have it. I coach plenty of men who do. In fact, I don't coach men who don't have at least the capability of growing that part of themselves. And I will quote someone, which is Dan Pink, who wrote a lot of famous books, including Free Agent Nation. My favorite Dan Pink book is A Whole New Mind, where he talks about what it'll take to be in this generation of work, which is left brain logic and right brain creativity and coming together across that transom. And so what I find is that if you have natural intuition, many women do, not all. I won't even say most. Many women have natural intuition. Many women have a higher level of sort of naturally born emotional intelligence. I believe that's how we're able to have children and not kill them. It's really tough. We birth those babies.
Careful.
You know, and if it is a little bit of anthropology, if you go back, right, because women were the gatherers and men were the hunters. Well, today, women are doing it all. We're hunting, we're gathering, and everything else. So it really takes that ability to harness intuition, emotional intelligence, it also helps to have some IQ, right? Some smart. Doesn't mean it's academic. It might be street smarts, which, you know, if I had to choose, I would choose that all day over academics. It's the blend. And so women tend to be very multidimensional, multitasking, which is a great debate today, although we are pretty good at it, or at least we feel like we have to. So we slog through. So I would say that's the difference. Again, not to say that men don't have it. You clearly have all of that. And yet you probably know men that don't.
Absolutely. And I actually know women that don't. So, yeah, I know we're sort of talking about generalist points and it's not everyone one way or the other, but I get what you're saying. In your journey of life, and let's pigeon this into the corporate space, what has changed for the better since you spent time in corporate to what you think is now?
How long is the show?
So that tells me you feel that there have been some good things that have changed.
There are. There are. And I'm going to start with the power of the women themselves, which is they are making their own way. They are moonlighting and they are having side hustles and they are starting their own businesses. They are saying no way more than they're saying yes. And no actually makes room for yes. So I would say it's really the women's movement of disrupting, leaving, and challenging the corporate bureaucracy that still exists in many countries. I'd say it's the women themselves. I would not say it's the company, because a company is technically a building, or now based on the virtual world and gig economy, it's a thing. The leaders at the top of companies, in my experience, have not changed that much. It's the women themselves that are saying, I'm not going to do it like that anymore. I'm going to go out on my own, or I'm going to start something on the side until it is stable. That baby becomes a toddler, and then I'm going to go do that full time. And it's incredibly empowering to both coach and watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Taking responsibility does exactly that. You can control your own destiny, and it's certainly much easier to do. It's still tough, but it's much easier to do that today. What's not helping, can I say, the women's movement in corporate?
Patriarchy. There are still so many, I don't know how to say it without sounding offensive, older white men and gentlemen at the top of the world's most well-known successful companies today. That's still what's happening. There's still the majority of the boardroom. There's still the majority of the C-suite. And if you don't mix that up with more thoughtful, open, high EQ, intuitive men and women of color, and frankly, men of color for that matter, it's just a slow ship to turn. I just don't see that much change or transformation. I see a ton of talk about it. I see a bunch of marketing bullshit. I see and hear and experience a bunch of lip service, and it's frustrating. So, yeah, that's how I'd answer that.
Makes sense. I've heard some comments similar in various areas from other guests before. What advice would you give younger people coming into or wanting to move into a corporate space, or are already in a corporate space and wanting to move their way up as strong, empowering women in the workplace?
Culture counts. And if you don't weigh that in your decision making, you're really missing out. You're really missing out. And you have to trust but verify. Like the term vetting. You have to vet and check and scrutinize, not just the company, which is readily available on the interweb. Thank you. You do need to vet, check, and scrutinize who you're going to work with and for, and if you're a leader of people, who's going to work for you. So I talk about this every day, either on my own podcast or in my own coaching practice or with my own friends. You have to be really careful and you have to trust but verify that the culture you're signing up for is real. And there's a ton of ways to do it. You can shadow for a day. You can sit in on a virtual meeting. You need to put yourself into the shoes of the advice you give your best friend and take it.
Good advice. Dana, tell us a bit about this book, this second book that you just finished last night.
Crazy timing, yeah? Oh, perfect timing. It's called BS for Burnout, Not Bitch, From Overdrive to Thrive, A to Z. So each chapter of the book is a letter of the non-Queen's English, I guess it is still Queen's English, alphabet, the American alphabet. So A is for authenticity, B is for burnout, C is for confidence, and so on and so forth. S is for self-love. It's really an important body of work. It's my life's body of work, in fact, and it's written mostly for women who want to go from being overworked and hyper-driven and high-achieving and overachieving and wired to the point of burnout. And showing them that there are ways to be super productive, successful, joyful, valuable, and valued without being burned out. And all of the tools to get there and stories, some science, some quotes. What's really cool is I was reading a few chapters to my husband. This is so cute. He said, well, where's the guy's guide? Because I've lived with you for 9 years and I don't know any of that shit.
Is that the next volume?
Talked about it because wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't that be cool? I would like to interview you. Now it's on the record. So, you know, really,
it'd
be so cool talking to men about your perspective and how you partner and what overachieving women really need. And sometimes from the guy's perspective, we're not even giving you a lifeline or a clue. Like, we're just expecting it. And they always say that, you know, it's a mind reading situation. Well, we do. We kind of want you to read our mind. But that's not going to happen. We got to talk to you about these tips and tricks and tools and traps to avoid. So I do feel men will get something out of this book as well. It is absolutely the double down for women and for up-and-coming women that aspire to be joyful, productive, valuable, and valued, that two-way street of value that I always like to talk about, without being burned out. And if they're burned out now, I'm going to help them to get out of that cycle the way I had to learn. And if they are approaching burnouts, to stop it before it starts. And if they've been burned out and they're terrified to go there again, how to really just avoid it altogether.
Well, it sounds like it's something I should. When is it due out?
October 11th, which I didn't know this. This is a true story. Is International Day of the Girl.
Wow, perfect timing again. Well, it's amazing how things just happen like that. So it sounds like what I need to do is get the book, read it, take some notes as we're going through, and say, "Hey, Dana, here. Do you want a man's perspective?
I would love
just one perspective." Maybe
I would love that, and I'd love to have you on my podcast when that time comes, because it would be cool to talk about it in real time and really to get sort of the male and female perspective on things, especially since you are high EQ and high IQ and you've got good intuition, or you wouldn't have said what you just said about divine timing, which it is. I couldn't believe. And it was a young woman that told me this. My own team didn't know. We're really good about looking at these things. Or doing social media posts. We all missed it. And it was a young junior in college visiting where I live on Kauai who said to me, well, that's so cool. And when does it come out? And my sorority is going to do a book club because we're all burned out now and we're only juniors in college. And how cool you picked International Day of the Girl. And I thought, I can't take credit for that. No, I had no idea.
It's definitely just a sign. But I think, look, to give you some kudos, because there's just not enough days in the year for the amount of days that we have with things nowadays. So it's impossible to keep up with all these things. But I'm a big believer that things just happen, part of the journey, and things do. It's amazing what sort of aligns just when you're moving along in your journey of life. Dana, what has helped you become this confident leader, confident female leader that we see in front of us today?
Learning from my own mistakes, curiosity. I was born that way. I'm a very intellectually curious person, and never, ever giving up on transformation. You have to accelerate your own transformation. No one's going to do it for you. So I continue to do it. I'm a work in progress. And as a coach, I like to say we teach what we most need to learn.
Dana, I love that advice, and I love how that's shaped you. I think the best thing I love about you and the time we've just spent together now is that you are taking charge for your own life. You are doing things, taking action, and you're helping other people have that same mindset and do the same thing. So look, I really appreciate you coming on today. You are, I'm pretty sure, our first guest from Hawaii. So you have that honor and privilege, and it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today. Thanks for being such a fantastic guest on the Culture of Leadership.
Thank you and aloha.
Thank you.
According to a study by Gallup, women account for 23% of senior leadership roles in the US. Whichever way you look at it, there's room for improvement. These are my three key takeaways from my conversation with Dana. My first key takeaway: confident leaders walk the walk. They don't just say things, they actually do them. People watch and follow what leaders do more than what they say. If the person at the top acts badly, it can make the whole place toxic. My second key takeaway: confident leaders focus on facts. They make sure to know the real information before making decisions. While they still pay attention to their feelings, they always base them on true facts, not on wrong ideas or guesses. My third key takeaway: confident leaders see strengths. They notice and appreciate what's special about each person. Instead of looking at what someone can't do, they focus on what they can do well. By using each person's unique skills, they make the whole team stronger. So in summary, my three key takeaways were: confident leaders walk the walk, confident leaders focus on facts, and confident leaders see strengths. Let me know your key takeaway on YouTube or at theculturofleadership.com. Thanks for joining me, and remember, the best outcome is on the other side of a genuine conversation.